Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Les Claypool is a musical mad scientist and one of the weirdest musicians to have commercial success in rock and roll. He's best known for his amazing bass playing and quirky sense of humor in leading the band Primus and for doing the theme for South Park. But he's also put together a handful of other really cool projects to make other types of music, including Oysterhead, the funk jazz supergroup with members of Phish and the Police, the Duo de Twang country music project, and most recently, the awesome partnership with Sean Lennon called the Claypool Lennon Delirium. He produces most of his music from his home studio, Rancho Relaxo, and is also an author and a film director. Oh, and he once auditioned for Metallica. Is there anything he can't do? Let's find out in the season 3 debut of Prisoners of Rock and Roll. What's up, everyone? Welcome to season 3 of the Prisoners of Rock and Roll and episode number 55. I'm your host, Bruce Kramer, and I'm happy to be doing our first show of 2023 with my good friend and co-host, Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
His name is Mud.
My name is Mud.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks as well as McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia, and we are so happy to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. What's going on, brother? Happy New Year.
Merry New Year. What's happening?
We're back a little sooner than we thought we were going to be, but you know, we got fans to do and music to talk about.
we thought about taking an extra week off for the holidays, but I said, hey, we can't let our fans down.
We ended 2022 on a good note. We're like, let's just keep the shit rolling and dive on in. So yet again, dude, another show topic that's been on the list for a while. And I'm really excited to be talking about this stuff, man. I'm a big fan of Les Claypool. I know you are too.
Yeah. I mean, I've been seeing him since I was a little kid. He's totally different than anything that music has to offer. Who's more wackier than him? Maybe Weird Al Yankovic, but you know, he has humor in his music, which usually I'm not really a big fan of, but the way he does it is pretty rad.
I guess when we're doing research for the show, I wind up reading a lot of articles and doing it with this one. I really just like, I just listen to a lot of the music.
Yeah. That's the best thing to do with them. It's like, how can you explain their music? You have to like listen to it.
Yeah. And I listen to a bunch of podcasts, like interviews. Seems like he's just does a ton of interviews. So I just listen to him, like just talking about music a lot. He's just a dude. I could listen to him talk about shit.
Yeah.
Like
he's
just,
a, yeah. Like he yeah, said in the, he's a mad scientist.
Yeah. He never, I was talking to a friend of mine, a family member today, and told him we're doing this. And he's like, yeah, man, dude, that's going to be awesome. That guy just never stops working. And It's true. He's always got like all these projects going on and they're all different. He's in different styles of music. Just really, really cool.
He's definitely a renaissance dude of different musics, you know, like weird free jazz kind of shit. To like, you know, Primus funk to like rock and roll straight like Oysterhead was.
Psychedelic stuff, jam bands, more heavy metal, funk stuff.
I mean, he can do it all.
Yeah, he really does it all. And I read an interview with him. He said that, you know, he's the guy that doesn't fit in anywhere, but he fits in a little bit of everywhere, which is kind of like,
Makes sense.
You know, like a, yeah, like I said in the monologue, like Primus is just such a weird band.
Yeah.
But they still had commercial success.
Totally. Everybody knows Big Brown Beaver.
Yeah.
You know, probably that was a really big hit in the '90s. You know, or everybody knows Jerry was a race car driver. But they have like a lot of songs that are just so kick ass. It's like every album is its own thing.
Definitely. I've looked a little bit into just like his musicianship too, and I thought it was really interesting. Like I was watching some YouTube video, like what makes him such a unique bass player. And I mean, of course, the music is interesting because it's written with the bass being front and center.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the main instrument. Well, most sure. of you know, rock and roll is guitars. But he also like I was reading that he just plays pretty much any different way you could play a bass, he'll do. Like he'll do the tapping, he'll do like flamenco, he'll do slapping, he puts whammy bars on it, he plays bass guitars with extra strings. Yeah, he just kind of uses the instrument for all kinds of other kind of shit. Really cool.
He's awesome, man. Like anything with like a bass, he'll play it. And he makes it interesting. He's just not like some dude keeping rhythm in the background. Like you said, he's the front man. You know, he makes the bass like the main part of the band.
Maybe before we start getting into his career, I was reading a couple things too. Just he was talking about his creativity in some interview. They were like, man, you're such an amazing bass player. And he was like, dude, I'm just trying to get the things out of my head. And the bass is just a crayon that I pulled out of the box. And I was sure. like, that's cool. And he's like, he's like, dude, I'm not a singer. He's like, I'm more like Mel Blanc trying to play a character.
Nice.
And he's like, I'm a narrator for all these characters. And he said he didn't really give a shit about his singing until he started playing with like Oysterhead. And he's like, these guys are fucking musicians. I need to really kind of work on my game here.
I don't know. I always enjoyed his vocals all through his career. It's just something different. Something, you know, something from Mars. I don't know.
Between that and the sense of humor and the music all put together. And it's also really cool, man, that he's willing to try all this other different kind of shit. Like all these side projects I was listening to, it's like if he wasn't successful with Primus, he wouldn't have the creativity or the latitude to do a lot of this kind of shit.
No, but that's how talented he is.
Sure.
You know, to be so abstract.
Yeah.
You know, it may be a little wacky or a little bit like that, but, you know, it's art.
He's also like, he's abstract, but he's not abstract to the point that like, it's fucking annoying.
No.
You know, it's not like Yoko Ono solo stuff or some of that other kind of crap.
Like,
that's
like free jazz.
Yeah. Some of that really out there, like art for art's sake kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's still good shit that I would listen to.
Yeah. I mean, he not only does the experimental, but not a pop song, but you know, a song that can be played on radio. Through the years, you would hear Primus on the radio. Not so much now, but you know, through the 90s, they were always on the radio.
And they're definitely a band that when I heard growing up, nothing had ever sounded like that. And I was like, no. What the hell? What is this? You know, like I was thinking about it. It's really odd that even that they had commercial success. And the way the music industry works now, they probably never would break it now if they were coming up.
I think they used videos to help them out to sell because they were so unique. All their videos, just like the Beastie Boys had videos, they were unique. Primus had the same kind of thing, like little art projects.
We've talked about that a lot, man, about how MTV, like this band got big because of MTV and that band broke because of MTV. I guess with that going away, too, it just has really made it. It's probably so much harder. And also with like, I don't know, man, there's less record labels and there's fewer companies owning all the radio stations. It's just the industry just sounds like a shitty place to try to come up now. And all that, you know, we talked about in that rock episode, all this crap that just sounds the same.
Yeah.
You know, nothing sounded like Primus in the 90s when I think music was a little bit more weird and diverse. And they sure as shit, nothing sounds like them now.
No, I mean, they are. I don't know, one of the last Mohicans of experimental. You know, I haven't seen anything lately from the Primus camp, but I always know like Les Claypool's always working on something.
Maybe I thought maybe the way we could tackle this, we could talk about like the his beginning, because there's some pretty interesting people he knew as a kid. And then we can get into Primus and then we could tackle all these side projects. I thought I knew a lot about him and his side projects. And I was finding stuff that I had never heard before. Like all these.
Oh, he has shit that we have no idea.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I found crap that I had to go looking on YouTube for because they never put out an album. You know, he'll go on tour with something like he's doing a jazz thing now called shit. I wrote it down. Les Claypool's Bastard Jazz.
Love it.
And it's great, just, you know, I had got something on YouTube, and it's like they've never released an album, but he would go, you know, he goes on tour. Yeah, pulls a band together and goes out on the road and tries something that's different. Great. Really cool, man. And the level of musicians with whom he works is just several of the interviews I read, he was just talking about like some of these shows, I don't even have to do anything. He's like, I could just lay on the stage because these motherfuckers can play. Yeah, he's around all these like really talented musicians. He's incredibly talented. Sure.
I think why everybody like Les, everybody, because he's so humble. You know, like he's like one of the greatest bass players ever. Does he take himself seriously? Not at all.
No, definitely not. And he's always had that kind of self-deprecating sense of humor and all the other kind of shit. You mentioned the videos too, man. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I spent a lot of time. Today was the first day I've been at work in almost 2 weeks. And I was sitting down and finally spending some time at a computer. And I just was watching a shit ton of their videos on YouTube. Like they did the cover of Devil Went Down to Georgia, and the video was all claymation. It was really cool.
I'd never seen that.
That's I'll send cool. it to you, man. It was really cool. Let me start with some of the really early shit before we get into this. So I think the interesting thing, man, was that he went to high school with Kirk Hammett.
Oh, wow.
That makes sense how he got
that connection with Metallica.
So he'd always been friends with him. And when Les was in high school, he was in a band called Blind Illusion that Kirk Hammett actually produced the album. But Kirk Hammett isn't listed anywhere on there because they realized if they used his name, the Metallica's management would be like, you need to pay us to use the name. But it's Les Claypool and Larry Leonde from Primus, but said that the Kirk Hammett name isn't on there. This is like I'll play a little bit of it. This is a song called Blood Shower off this first. Cool. This is the first thing he ever did.
All right. Very Metallica.
Yeah, right. I would never know that that's Les Claypool on that.
No, but it doesn't sound anything like his career, what he was doing.
But his ties to Metallica, when Cliff Burton died, Kirk Hammett told Les Claypool, hey, man, you should try out to be the next bassist for Metallica.
Oh, yeah. They had rehearsals with him and everything. But, you know, it didn't go to him, obviously. It went to Jason Newsted. But that didn't stop Les from recording a Metallica song. Les did his own little version of The Thing That Should Not Be by Metallica. And it kind of gives you an idea what maybe Les would have sounded like with Metallica. Let's play it. You know that song?
Yeah.
It's a pretty well-known Metallica song.
Yeah.
I think it sounds awesome.
It's cool.
He has his like weird little voice on there. mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I was digging it, dude.
But could you imagine Les Claypool being in Metallica?
Yeah, and the joke was always what Metallica, what James Hetfield said, oh, he didn't get the job, he was too good.
Yes.
And, even Claypool admits, he's like, dude, I'm not the fit. I wasn't the fit for that band.
No, but you know, it's pretty cool that he's in the story.
Sure. He's in the the Garage Inc. album. He's on that.
Yes.
He's on the Tuesday's Gone, I think, the cover with all those other musicians covering Skynyrd. I think he's on that, and he's on a couple other things. So yeah, so he ducks in and out of the relationship with Metallica every once in a while. So it was kind of, yeah, it was cool that it's just so weird, man, that two guys from bands like that grew up together.
You see stuff like that. Like Flea grew up around the Guns N' Roses guys, you know, like that whole circle, they all ran together.
Yeah. It's really odd, but the band Primus, man, I started talking about them.
Yeah.
They've had, you know, like a handful of other like lineups, but they've always been a three-piece band.
Yes.
You know, we've never really, you know, we talked about ZZ Top and Cream and all those other great three-piece bands, but Primus too, man, is one, just, you know, drum, guitar, and a bass. So even when they started, it was just two guys and a drum machine.
Really?
Yeah, they said they were initially a band called Primate, and another band named Primate threatened to sue them, so they changed their name to Primus. I thought it was really cool, man. Like, so I was just reading it, like, Les Claypool was working as a carpenter, and he sold his car to raise enough money to cut a demo. And it's kind of, yeah, they just kind of took off. Yeah, their stuff has always been, like you said, just, it's built around the bass, and the stuff is really bizarre. And
the other dudes in the band are fucking great. As many times as the lineup has changed, the band's always solid. I mean, I think their drummer is one of the best drummers around. He I'm not sure about his name, but he like started with them. Then he left the band. Maybe I think he had a sickness, and then he came back to the band. And I actually saw the drummer with the Dead End Company this summer. He sat in with them, and it was awesome.
Yeah, Jay. I think his name's Jay Lane. He's been in the band a couple times. He's played with Rat Dog and Further.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Dead. Even the one dude, Tim Alexander, he's played with the Perfect Circle, the Maynard's side project.
Sure.
And he's been in the Blue Man Group, that weird, very visual, you know, the bald guys with the painted all blue.
That would be the perfect job for me.
Yeah.
I got the bald head already.
So just, yeah, dude, they've always had a kind of revolving door of different people. And I read that sometimes people have quit because they're just like, yeah, okay, man, this is just kind of run its course. And
well, how can you keep up with his ideas? Like, you know, he'd be like, I'm sure guys in his band's like, oh, this is a really dumb idea. Like, he did the Willy Wonka soundtrack. We'll get to that later. But that is as bizarre as it gets.
And he said something, too, that I run the laziest band ever. He's like, we never really rehearse. We just kind of like, we learn the songs, and then we just kind of go drink wine and do kinds of other shit. So I could see.
Crazy because they're unbelievable live.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't we just start? We'll start talking about some of the, some of the other albums that came out, dude. Their first like studio album is an album called Frizzle Fry, 1990. And that's really, they start getting popular, but one song on there, let's play a little bit of it, is Too Many Puppies. It's so like, you know, that opening is so, it's so different sounding. And then weird voice comes in, like, and he's almost got like a Spanish thing, like affect to it. It's great.
The thing that I love about this song is he's saying little puppies, and he's at soldiers, like little young soldiers in war, you know, like too many puppies
getting killed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's fucking brilliant, man. Not only is he an amazing bass player, but he's also an amazing lyricist. His imagination runs wild.
You know, yeah, dude. All the crap. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And you see that with, I mean, their stage shows, right? They're always in these weird outfits and all kinds of other crap. And,
oh, God, dude. Yeah. You go to one of their concerts, it's like visiting the Manson Ranch.
Yeah,
there's so many friggin' like wackadoos at their shows.
One of the things I sent you today, like he was talking before he was playing and he's wearing like a pig mask. He's trying to talk seriously to the crowd about his music. It just, or he's playing a solo and he's wearing like a monkey mask.
But that's less.
Sure. Right. I mean, shit, that's what you're going to get when he comes in, when you see him.
You know, you're going to get something weird.
Absolutely.
Like the last time I saw them, I was like, they were just a little bit too weird for a little bit too long.
Oh, the tour with Mastodon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I saw them with that too.
It was just a little weird too long. Like he played too many like free jazz kind of shit.
You know, there is another song on Frizzle Fry that was really huge for them. And that was John the Fisherman. That was like a
great song.
That's still a huge song. Let's play a little bit
of that. Rock
that
shit.
Yeah, man. I'm going to jump in a little bit and just, here you go. He makes up all these characters and that's who he's singing about.
He has such a twang to his voice in a lot. Where do you know where he's from?
Yeah, I think he's from California.
He definitely has like a twang in his singing. Like, you know, like a redneck kind of thing.
Yeah, he's definitely got a weird like an affect to his voice or just the way he talks. It's very like
phrases that. Shit. And yeah.
It's like it's very like carnival barkery kind of like step right up. It's like amusement park kind of like bizarre amusement park music.
Well, he freaked the fucking freak show. He's a soundtrack of the freak show.
Yeah, I've got a side project that he did that is we kind of went unreleased for a while. I'll talk about it a little bit later. That was like, it was okay. Really like freak show kind of shit. I found it tonight when I was looking around. So Frizzle Fry comes out and that lands them their record deal with Interscope. And then that's when Sailing to Seas of Cheese came out.
The greatest fucking album.
Dude, it's awesome. That was
the time it came out. What a crazy album. It's the middle of like, what was it? 1990 when that album came out.
Yeah. 91. Which is, as we know, the greatest year of music history. As we did a whole 2-hour show on 1991 and how great it was. There's so many awesome. I was just listening to this album this week, leading up to this, and it still holds up for me.
I've been listening to this shit. I grew up listening to this. We had this too. On cassette. Fucking play,
Tommy the Cat.
Yeah.
Do you know who does the voice of Tommy the Cat?
I do not.
It's Tom Waits.
Wow.
So
that's Tom, awesome.
And he's which I was like, and I read that, I was like, holy shit, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
How the fuck did he get Tom Waits to do that shit early on his album?
He's been on a bunch of, and Les Claypool's been on a handful of Tom Waits songs. I have one that he plays bass on, but here, there's a little I'd never realized that. The million times I've heard this song, I was like, shit, you're right, it's Tom Waits.
Well, I remember this song for a meal ago. Tommy the Cat is a real back clear out of reform out of this little twain to his mighty throat. Many a fat other man is demise while staring point blank down the cavernous barrel of this awesome prowling machine. Truly a wonder of nature, this urban predator. Tommy the Cat had many a story to tell, but it was a rare occasion such as this that he did.
Tommy
Yeah, Tom Waits.
I love it.
I never knew that. I love Tom Waits.
I do too, man. Yeah, somehow we've been doing this for 2 years and we haven't talked about Tom Waits at all.
I'll definitely have to do a show about him.
He's a fucking
great poet, man.
He's really cool. And I tend to like musicians that have really weird voices.
Yeah.
Him and I like Leonard Cohen and shit, Claypool. So really cool.
If we play Tom the Cat, you got to play Jerry the Race Car Driver.
Absolutely, dude. Here you go.
I love the beginning of this when you hear the beginning of the, you know, turn it up.
Yep.
Dude, I remember hearing that for the first time, and it was so bizarre.
That point where he goes like, go, and it just gets like really it just gets so kick ass. Right. That might have been the first song I ever heard by them. And I was like, man, what is this?
Yeah, I remember being in the Bill and Ted movie, the sequel.
Yeah.
They were on the soundtrack.
That's such a great album. The next one too that came out after that, Pork Soda. I used to listen to that.
Great album, dude.
I listened to that religiously.
What do we have on there from that?
You got My Name Is Mud, which
we
played a little bit of it. Hang on, let me pull up Pork Soda. I remember like I was so into that, man. I remember being in like my high school English class and having to write write about a poem or something, and I would like print Primus lyrics and be like, I'm gonna write about this kind of stuff. It was just really cool, dude. Mr. Kringle was pretty good. Here you go.
I think Pork Soda was the street credit album. Everybody loves that album. It doesn't even have like a big hit on it or anything like that. Besides My Name Is Mud.
It was like darker too. Dealt with a lot of the air is getting slippery. The guy, like, I think he kills himself at the end. You know, dude, as that was playing, I was just pulling up to see what he's playing in that. Cause he's playing, he's playing something with a bow. It's something, you know, it's a double bass. He's playing an upright double bass, but the Song Facts website came up and I'm looking at it. Song Facts is also on Pantheon, their podcast. Said that Mr. Kringle is actually, the song is about the drummer for Faith No More. His pseudonym was Mr. Kringle, and what he would use when he would go into like a hotel so people wouldn't find him. Okay.
He's a great drummer. The drummer for Faith No More. He like plays with Ozzy. Yeah, he's a fantastic
Mike Borden.
Yeah, he's a fantastic drummer. Faith No More is a great fucking band.
Yes, we could do a whole. We could get into a whole thing about them, man. I listened to them. I there's at least two of their albums that I listened to the cassette so much I broke it, The Real Thing and Angel Dust. I was thinking about them a little bit too when we were doing all this shit. That like Mike Patton does a lot of weird side projects kind of stuff too.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. They're like two of like beginning of like what alternative mainstream.
Mike Patton's a little bit more like out there, like avant-garde.
Yeah.
Really weird kind of crap.
Yeah.
But even like the crap that he did with like Mr. Bungle and all that other kind of shit was, you know, I can see some loose comparisons here with some of the stuff that Les Claypool and Primus does.
It's crazy they didn't work together.
Yeah, I thought that too. I thought it was interesting too. Pork Soda is also where they stopped recording all their albums in a studio, and they started using, they recorded it in their rehearsal space. And then everything that they've done ever since, they recorded in his home.
It's great.
Which, and he calls his home Rancho Relaxo.
Hey, which, I knew that name.
Yes, after The Simpsons. It's also what I used to call my house when I lived in Philadelphia. I used to always joke and called it Rancho Relaxo, because that was where Primus recorded all their stuff. I thought it was cool. Yeah, when mail started coming to my house, somehow addressed to Rancho Relaxo, I was like, I knew it had gone too far, but
damn it, good jokes can never go too far, Bruce. Right.
Yeah, somehow I was getting like credit card applications like Carol of Rancho Relaxo, but it's still pretty funny. The next album comes out, Tales from the Punch Bowl. You know, that album goes gold. You know what I remember that album about that album was that the CD you could put in your computer, and it had like a little game on it. And
oh, wow.
Like some animations and shit. And I remember that was so different because it came out in 95. So there's like the internet
of all
like,
that shit.
Right. So the internet was like barely started. Yeah. And it was like an internet. It was called like a CD Plus or some shit like that.
CD ROM, was it?
Yeah, it was kind of like a CD ROM. I don't really remember much about the album. I remember thinking I didn't really like it. We don't even have anything on the playlist from it. Oh, fuck. Winona's Big Brown Beaver is on it. Shit. Okay. Southbound Pachyderm. All right. So I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about, boy.
Yeah, I have no clue what the hell I'm talking about. For some reason, I thought
too much eggnog, Bruce.
I know, right? I thought Winona's Big Brown Beaver was on the Brown album. So it shows how much I know.
Which is a great fucking album. Yeah. The Brown album.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of Winona's Big Brown Beaver.
I love Beaver.
That was the huge, I mean, that was a huge hit. That video, dude, is so funny, too, man.
Yeah, like they all look like plastic.
The plastic cowboys. So yeah. Here you go. So much going on that, man. It's so
listening
fast.
To it in the earphones is like we say every week. There's so much shit going on. He's another dude that uses the studio as an instrument, man.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah, and I remember all the controversy of that song. Like Winona Ryder thought it was about her, and she was all
her big brown beaver.
Yeah, and she was like going to sue them or something. There was all this kind of other shit.
God,
he was like, dude, Winona's not even spelled. He's like, you know, Winona Judge should be suing me, not her. Not Winona Ryder. He's like, it's not even spelled the right way.
The Judds.
And yeah, the Brown album comes out in 97.
Great album.
Dude, the opening bass line for Shake Hands with Beef. I love it. Let me play a little bit of that too.
Awesome.
Just pretty the bass cool. line. I love the bass line of that song. I just love how twangy it is and heavy. It sounds a little bit like that. The solo from the Holy Mackerel, the song he does with Henry Rollins. It sounds real. The music sounds real similar to that. But we'll get to that.
Yeah. I mean, every song that he does sounds different.
Which is weird because you just, you know, a bass, you would think traditionally it's got four strings, right? It's not as complicated as a guitar, but he makes so many sounds come out of it.
But he uses so many different pedals and boards and different kind of basses, five string basses, six string basses, you know, vintage shit, stand up basses. You know, he plays it all.
Yeah, I've got one song later that he plays just a one string bass called the Whamola.
Whamola.
Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy shit, man.
I like that name, Whamola.
Whamola. Yeah. Nice. So, well, yeah, we'll get to it. I'm gonna kind of stay in the lane here. And then they had a couple other out, like they had the album Antipop came out in 99, which I don't remember at all. Other than I just saw that like the other musicians that were on it, like Tom Morello, James Hetfield, Jim Martin from Faith No More, and Stuart Copeland, which I was like, okay, I just don't remember any. I don't know, man. Maybe I just kind of lost track of them by then.
What was it called?
Antipop. Let's just play something, man. What's Electric Uncle Sam? That's got the song with the most listens on Prime, on Spotify. Okay.
I like really do it. Anything.
Yeah, it was all right. The song Lacquerhead was on that album. I remember that one.
Okay.
Yeah, dude. And that's kind of like that's them through the 90s. But then I guess they went on tour that one year. Well, shit, it was on tour last year. They played A Farewell to Kings by Rush in its entirety. Yeah. They were doing that. Yeah. He's a big Rush. He's a
huge
guy.
Rush fan. He was a good friend. He was good friend. Well, he still is good friends with
Geddy Lee. And, yeah. Yeah.
I remember that seeing him on MTV as a kid going fishing, like in Canada, you know.
He performed, Les Claypool performed at Rush's, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction for them, which makes sense, right? Yeah. I mean, Geddy Lee's also an amazing bass player. And they did all that stuff at the South Park concert.
That was cool shit.
And he did all that. He did all the stuff on that too with the guys from Ween. Like I'm not a big fan of them, but they're also really weird, kind of like Primus.
They're very weird. Yeah, yeah, they're a Pennsylvania band.
They are. Yeah, like up near like New Hope. They're a little. Yeah, they're a little too much for me. But
you know, it was a crazy thing before we in timeline wise.
Yeah. Yep.
Dude, when Primus did the Willy Wonka soundtrack.
Yes. So they went in like whatever that was, like 2017, they recorded, it was called Primus and the Chocolate Factory with the Fungi Ensemble. And they did the entire soundtrack for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I've seen them on tour. It was fucking awesome, man. Like the first set, they come out, they do Too Many Puppies, they do Remind Me of Mud, they do a bunch of songs. Then they take maybe about a 20-minute break. And when they come back from the break, the curtains go up and it's fucking Candyland. Like he comes out with a big fucking nose on his face, you know, and the music isn't what you think it is. It sounds nothing like the original soundtrack. What do I got? Golden Ticket on there?
Yeah, here.
Play it out.
I listened to it this week, man. It's weird.
I love it. So awesome, dude.
Yeah. The song would, when Willy Wonka is taking the kids through that tunnel and it gets all like nightmares and shit. That's a weird, when Primus covered that, it was like, that's the perfect song for Primus to do.
Dude, it was great live. They did the whole sequence of like going through like the tunnel of light. Oh, dude, it was so cool. He was dressed in like the Gene Wilder kind of outfit with the big top hat on. But it it was totally something there. I was on mushrooms. And it
I'm
really,
sure
like,
you were.
Oh, dude, it was it explained. I can explain a lot better, but, you know, if considering that I was on mushrooms. But that's the only way to see that show. It was fucking bizarre, man.
I totally missed that they ever did that. Like you mentioned it in another episode that they did it. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I went home and I looked it up and I was like, what the fuck?
It was the most interesting shows that I've ever been to. It was at the Tower Theater.
Yeah. And I was like, I would have gone to see that. I don't know how I have no idea how I just missed that part of their career, but shame on me. No,
it was cool. I had this fucking cool hoodie that it said Primus, but in the Wonka font.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it was. I think somebody stole that from me in the bar.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sitting here saying that I'm a big fan of theirs. And I'm like, I don't know what fucking song is on Tales from the Punch Bowl. And I totally missed the Wonka edition.
The Wonka thing is really weird. If you're just sitting around listening to it. Yeah, it's bizarre. Yeah. But I think it was made to see live.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. When I was listening to it, it was a lot of kind of skipping around. Like, all right, I know this song. I know that song. Okay, that's enough. You know, just you're right. It's not like just something to listen to when you're doing shit in the background.
No, I mean, I like it. I mean, right. It's just another weird thing that Primus did.
Yeah, dude, that might be it for Primus, dude. Like, I mean, there's so many other great songs. I'm just running through the list here to see if there's other Primus songs that we didn't play. Oh, I found he did a Spanish version of My Name is Mud called Me Llamo Mud.
Yeah, mamo.
Which I was like, this is bizarre. Here's a little bit of it. It's just weird, man. I was like, I don't know what the hell. I don't know where the hell I found that.
That's fucking great. I see on this playlist, Primus, they did Have a Cigar.
Yeah, dude, that was the next thing I wanted to talk about. So they came out with that Miscellaneous Debris. It was like an EP that came out in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I recognize the cover.
Yeah, and they covered, there's two songs on here. One was Making Plans for Nigel, which is an old XTC song. Okay. Yeah, and then Have a Cigar by Pink Floyd. I'll play a little bit of that.
I like that better than the Foo Fighters version.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, I remember, I think I had that EP.
It's
bunch of covers and some weird shit on it.
Yeah, I remember it.
And I get, probably the other thing too that Primus did that was the really big thing. I mentioned it in the opener was the theme from South Park,
which is a cultural iconish thing.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, people don't even know who Primus is. But they know this song. I mean,
I was trying to explain to my I don't know, I was listening to some of their stuff in the car or something. I was trying to explain to my kid who Primus was. I think I was listening to Jerry's Race Car Driver. I'm like, oh, it's the guy that does the South Park theme. So, some people probably don't even know that he's, that's little cartoon to him in the beginning and all kinds of other stuff. So
if you're a fan of the show, you know, it's Les Claypool. But
yeah,
I mean, how many people actually know who Les Claypool is, though? Like, people have been watching that show for 20-something years, and they probably don't even know who it is.
I was reading something about, like, how he made that, and he's like, the two guys that did South Park sent him the demo. It was, like, the Santa versus Jesus, and they were like, hey, man, we've got, like, $70. We're big fans of you. This is all we can offer. And he was like, Les Claypool just thought it was hilarious. And just did it for, he's like, I'm not doing it for your money, man. I just thought it was, I thought it was a really cool, creative cartoon I want to be a part of. So
did dude, maybe we could get him to do something for us.
Right. He's like, shit, man. He was on all these podcasts. I was like, we, you know, reach out. He'd probably, maybe he'd come on our show.
I mean, our theme song is pretty kick ass, but right. Like, you know, a Les Claypool original.
Les Claypool version. Sure. I do have a version of it from the South Park, the 25th anniversary concert. Here you go.
Oh, yeah. Play it.
Yeah. You know, I'll play the real version. This is another 4 minutes long, so.
I'm going down south. I'm gonna have myself a time.
Friendly faces everywhere. Humble folks without temptation.
Going down south. I'm gonna leave my woes behind.
Ample parking day or night. People starting party never.
And on up south, I'm gonna see if I can't unwind.
So South Park started in 1997. So Primus is really fucking popular by the time this comes out, right? So
yeah, and it's amazing they did it like pro bono.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that just shows you they appreciate like the art of shit, man. You know, like
right.
We're gonna these guys don't have any money, but maybe he see them like, wow, they're really onto something and they're gonna kick the shit out of it if they get a chance.
That's cool, man. I'd like that story that they were just big Primus fans growing up and they just wrote him a letter and the pilot. And he was like, this is fucking hysterical and just agreed to do it. You know?
I still haven't seen that concert, that South Park anniversary show. I heard that was awesome.
I've seen parts of it. I haven't watched the entire thing, but it was pretty cool. The stuff that I watched. Yeah, it's worth checking out. I'm sure it's on YouTube or something else. So. I think that's it, dude, for Primus, man. You want to maybe we'll take a commercial break.
Did you ever hear they're calling like we
Primus sucks?
Primus sucks.
Yeah.
I remember being a little kid and me and Doug would always be like, Primus sucks.
I always thought it's like, oh, we could send a Primus song to the electric chair and be like, Primus sucks. And I was like, some people may not get the joke, but
no.
Yeah. Our listeners might. Our listeners are pretty smart, but.
Smart.
I can do it. I'm smart. Yeah, dude. Why don't we take a commercial break and we can come back and we can talk about all these side projects, dude. I've got so many. I've got.
Oh yeah.
7, 8, 9 different side projects, including some shit I had never even heard of before. And you know, dude, I've got a ton of listener feedback. We've got the electric chair. We got some other good stuff. So, all right, we'll be back.
Stick around.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is also proud to be sponsored by Boldfoot Socks. Boldfoot Socks is a veteran-owned business to make socks for every occasion. Whether you're looking for a pair of socks to wear to the gym as you desperately try to stick to that New Year's resolution, or if you're looking to bring a little quirkiness to your outfits like Les Claypool, Boldfoot has you covered. On top of that, every pair is made in America, and they give 5% of all of their proceeds to veteran charities. Head on over to boldfoot.com as soon as you're done listening to us and check them out. That's boldfoot.com.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
We're back from the commercial break, man. Thanks so much for sticking with us. So we've got a long list, man, of all these other side projects and some of the stuff they released albums, some of the stuff they didn't. There's some uncovered kind of shit. The first one, man.
Wacky shit on there.
Yeah. And it's like the music genres get all over the place, which is what I love about this. The first one that is the side project that I had on the list, I think we should talk about, is Oysterhead, because it was so different than anything else that
he had done. I had high expectations for this album, but then, like, all in all, it's just an okay record. And I'm a huge Trey Anastasio fan, Fish. I'm a huge Stuart Copeland. You know, he's a great, amazing drummer. In theory, it should have worked out great. But, you know, the Fish fans didn't really get into the whole Oysterhead thing. It was a cool little side project, but it was just, you know, it just didn't gel. I don't think it gelled.
Several of these side projects, Les pulls together a band to do like one show, like a festival or something. And then it winds up becoming a bigger thing. Like, so this is, he pulled together the three guys. And as you said, it's Trey Anastasio from Fish and Stuart Copeland from The Police to play the New Orleans Jazz Fest in 2000. And they really enjoy it. They like working together. They put out an album. They start going on tour. The tour kind of gets put on hold because of 9/11. Yeah, dude, I liked it. I remember having this CD and listening to it a lot when I was at work and sitting at my desk and shit, just because it was so different than anything else that he had done.
Let's hear something off it.
Yeah, dude. Here you go. You got Shadow of a Man on here.
Great song.
Billy came back from Vietnam, just a shadow of a man. He was a shadow of a man when he came back from Vietnam. Billy came back from Vietnam, just a shadow of a man. He was a shadow of a man when he came back from Vietnam. He was spraying an agent orange on the foliage of the land out of 80-gallon cans way back in Vietnam.
I like that part when it snaps out of the vocals and it just, the sound gets really big.
It's a crazy sounding record, you know, these three monsters on one record. They just make such a weird noise.
But one of the things I listened to with him, he was like, this project was weird for him. He's like, because normally he's like, everything I've ever done, I drive. I'm in charge. It's my band. He's like, and Trey Anastasio is like that, and Stuart Copeland are like that. So he's like, you got three guys that are big, like musical swinging dicks in the room. He's like, we had to learn how to like kind of work together. I was like, yeah, and I thought that was kind of cool. Like, all right, we're three pieces, and we got to learn how to do our thing.
Yeah, I mean it worked out. I just don't think it was as good as it sounds in theory,
like on paper.
Yeah, I remember it was kind of like, oh, this is going to be the shit. And it's kind of weak, like as a whole, you know, it has its good moments, but as a complete album, it's kind of weak.
Okay. I hadn't listened to it in forever, and I listened to it again doing the research for this.
Like, the Fish fans can care less about it, you know, and they think Trey like walks on water. I do anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, is there another song from there on the playlist?
Yeah, you got Armies on Ecstasy is on here.
Let's hear a little bit of that.
All right. I definitely hear what he was saying about, like, he was trying to sing more, like,
yeah,
instead of doing the narrating kind of shit he did at Primus. I could definitely hear that.
I like that song. That when it said maybe what I thought it should have sound like is something more aligned to that, you know, very jammy. Yeah, you know, very.
It's got, yeah, like a jazzy kind of sound, especially the opening. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
He said he think they've talked about getting back together and doing something else, but they can't find a time where the three of them aren't.
I think they played a maybe not last summer, but the summer before that.
They've done some like one off kind of shit, but they've talked about like doing another album festival. And they just
I'd rather just go see them. They hear another album by them. I don't know if that will work.
Yeah, so that's like just something different. You know, he's doing some jazz kind of shit, but going back, man, and going through some stuff maybe a little bit more linearly. 1994, he put out an album called Sausage. Sausage was the name of the Primus demo that they recorded like when they were just getting started. So it's kind of like a throwback to that. And the guys on the band, it's like the original lineup of Primus. So it's like when they started in like 88. So I remember when this came out, I just thought it sounded like a Primus album. I was like, I didn't see what the difference was.
I never heard of this Sausage.
So, yeah, this is a song called Riddles Are Abound Tonight. Like a Primus
so
song.
Weird. So
it's just said it's just the original.
Awesome.
I guess as the band changed their lineups, he got back together with the original guys and were like, we're just going to make this one off album. It's kind of cool.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I like that too. I like it a lot. Maybe going out of the shit linearly. The other album that sounds a lot like Primus stuff was the Highball with the Devil, the Les Claypool and the Holy Mackerel.
Oh God, I love this album.
Man, we were working together when this came out, man. And we used to play this every goddamn day.
Shit out of it.
Every fucking day.
It was so weird. It was like other people we work with, like, are you guys really going to play this again? We were like, hell yeah, we are.
Yeah. I remember, man, the one song about it raining. I remember you just walking in the store just going like rain, 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 rain. It's interesting that he plays almost every instrument on this too. He plays the guitar, the drums, it was a solo album. He came out within 96. So it's like, you know,
yeah,
Primus is doing their thing. And he just decides like, fuck it, I'm going to go do this kind of thing on my own. So it was really cool, man. I love this album. I had this big, when they were promoting it, they gave us all the posters for it. I took all that shit home, had it hanging in my room.
Oh, dude, that album cover is great with the devil on it.
Yeah,
the stars and the devil. Yeah. Like,
I think he drew it. Yeah. I think he drew that. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, you got Highball with the Devil on here.
Play it.
Back, 'cause his tongue was tight and shy, so he laid the money.
Yeah, dude. There's so many. There's like a jazz song on there.
Oh, there's so many different kinds of shit going on in that album. Yeah.
Oh, he's also, there's that song Delicate Tendrils, which Henry Rollins does the spoken word over.
Yes.
Yeah, I threw that on the playlist today. I was listening to this when I was driving around today. Let's play a little bit of that since we both
cool.
fucking Henry so much. I'll skip
it. I know, we all love Henry.
You hated them because they looked weak and slightly scared. You circled the water hole and thought about closing in. Now you have it. You feel weak in your power to keep it. Desperate to make me see that you won't let them take it away because it's yours. You never had to justify yourself and your possessions before. I earned this. I worked hard for what I've got. I paid my dues. I deserve this. You say these things to yourself as the animals circle and wait. Shake your fists at the hyenas. Chase them away from your waterhole.
I love it, man.
He's so cool.
I remember this. I remember reading something like when this album came out that Henry Rollins heard that Les Claypool was doing this and he just mailed him the spoken word thing like, hey, man, maybe you can use this for something. And just getting Les Claypool was like, OK, I'll try to put some music to this. really, really cool, man. I saw him on this tour, too. And it was awesome. It was
great. You see them on the Holy Mackerel tour?
I did.
Did you really?
I did. They played, shit, man, maybe the Tower Theater, some small venue in Philadelphia.
I would have loved to have seen that.
I never guess. Somebody threw a Doc Martin on stage at him, and he stopped playing, and he picked it up and was like, somebody is missing one half of a very expensive pair of shoes. I will leave this on the stage for you. And then somebody just yelled like, Les, you're the shit. And he's like, yes, indeed, I am the shit. Go! And then he walked right back into the music. It was so cool. I love that album. I was a really, really big fan of that.
Yeah, I was really into it.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was like, what was it, 96?
Yeah, 1996 it came out.
So weird for 96. The middle of like Hanson and Third Eye Blind. And
again, it's like that Sausage album came out in 94. The Holy Mackerel came out in 96. I have all the dates of all the Primus albums on here too. So it's like, Fork Soda's in 93, Tales from the Punch Bowl is 95, the Brown album is 97. So he's putting out something almost every year. Like he's just banging all this stuff out. All right. So that's like, so Sausage and the Holy Mackerel were kind of Primus sounding projects. Oysterhead is kind of like this jazz thing. And then he comes out with these other albums, man, that are just really, they're more like jam bands. And the first one was like Colonel Les Claypool's Fearless Flying Frog Brigade.
That is a great name, dude.
And I'm surprised I said it without fucking it up, but it's like, you know, I had to record the monologue, the opening monologue, like 7 times. I kept screwing it up, but I just banged that out without messing it up. But, yeah, man, another one-off project that started as like a one-off for a music festival, and they're kind of a jam band. They've done a couple live albums. They did a studio album. They covered some stuff from Sausage. They covered some stuff from the Holy Mackerel album, and they've covered a whole bunch of other bands too.
Okay. Do we have anything?
Yeah, man. We do. We got, he covered Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
Right on.
The Pink Floyd. So here you go. That was really cool.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, it's really different, but it's really cool. I like that song. I like that Pink Floyd song a lot. But I was digging that, man.
What was that on, bro?
It's on the live album called Live Frogs, Set 1 and 2.
Okay, it's on our playlist?
I threw it on the playlist, yeah.
Okay, because I'm going to have to listen to that whole... You said it was 15 minutes long.
Yeah, it was like 12 and change. So
holy shit, still long.
And they released a studio album, too, called Purple Onion. And there's a song on there called Whamola that I wanted to play because that was an example of him playing the instrument of Whamola. So the Whamola is kind of like an electric like a wash tub bass.
Yeah, you sent me something today about this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's one note and it has a whammy bar at the end of it. And he plays it with like a drum, like a drumstick. I actually remember him playing this when I saw him with the Holy Mackerel band. I was like, what the hell is he?
It's like an old time like yeehaw.
Yeah, like a hillbilly. Right. Yeah. Like a hillbilly. Yeah. And I guess he makes them or he had some company make one for him.
Like electrified.
Yeah, and it's actually what he's playing on the South Park song. That's what he's playing instead of his regular bass. But is like largely this is a song called Whamola. So here's a little bit of it. I thought it was really cool.
Cool.
Really out there, but it's just got a really
very
funky,
cool,
yeah, like very a funky, cool, like a very funky sound. And it's just cool that he's got a whammy bar at the top, and he's like, you know, he's bending it and he's banging on it with a drum, and he's wearing like a monkey mask in the video I sent. It's just it's cool.
Yeah, I loved it when you sent me that. It's totally original, and of course the monkey mask is what
puts it over the top because that's him. So
I dig his sense of humor so much, man.
It's so quirky because even like some of those things, like he'll be wearing the monkey mask on stage, but then he doesn't address it. He just acts like himself. He just talks to the audience. Like,
What mask are you talking about?
Right. What are you staring at? Then he did another band called Colonel Claypool's Bucket of Bernie Brains. And that is him. It's all like, so Buckethead, the guy that was in Guns N' Roses for a while.
Yeah, sure.
Bernie Worrell from Parliament Funkadelic. So he's the Bernie, and Brain is the guy from Primus. And I saw some interview with Claypool. He said that the Bernie Worrell from Parliament was the best musician he's ever played with.
I'm sure.
And they thought it was interesting that he said they never rehearsed and they never prepared a set list ahead of time. They just walked out on stage and were like, we're going to play this. And it just kind of like, you know, so different.
Hey man, you got to be ready for anything when you do something like that.
Really, I found something else that was really weird. So if you look at the album cover for it, it's got like a, I don't know, like a thing in it, and it has an eyeball in the middle. And there's a band that's been around for like 30 years called The Residents that the guys have never said who they are. They always appear, they're wearing helmets that look like eyeballs, and they're wearing tuxedos.
Oh, and I knew this. I know this. Yeah, I remember that cover.
Yeah, and these guys, like, and they've always speculated that Les Claypool was one of these guys. And they were like, oh, he's putting the eyeball on the album cover as a subtle hint, like, oh, I'm actually in this band. But he's never said he is. And, you know, I think it sounds like this band, The Residents, was around way before Primus was, but I thought that was interesting. So, but they have a song called Buckethead. Here's a little bit of that.
Cool.
He didn't like to jostle in the light, finding it much soother in the night. With his face as pale as pancakes and his posture in rebellion with his height. He was raised to respect father, he was loving to his ma, being kind to all the children and the animals he saw. In his youth he looked at Jacko with gleaming admiration, moonwalking through the gardens of his Disneyland vacation. Then he took a ballet class, and he grew into his face, and he gave
him that's
cool.
Yeah, it's a little too weird for me.
It's Nightmare Before Christmas-ish.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely,
it's very it's dramatic, not dramatic, but it's I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. Very Danny Elfman.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get the I don't know, man. I don't know a whole lot about Buckethead. I just that's not what I expected to hear from.
Yeah.
Him.
He definitely has like some kind of effect. Part of his sound is like effects.
Yeah,
I never liked him. I never gave a shit about him.
I didn't either. And I always thought he was a dude who was kind of like, all right, you're the shitty replacement for Slash when he was on Guns N' Roses for a little while.
I don't think he was anything special at all.
Yeah, I just never cared. I was like, all right, man, yeah. You're some dude wearing a KFC bucket on your head. What do I, you know, All right, you're all gimmick. And it was also like, yeah, when he was in Guns N' Roses, all right, instead of the guy with the top hat, you got the guy with the bucket on his head. Like, what the fuck do I care? But I don't know.
Bad mistake.
Yeah.
Axl was fucking retarded for fucking decades.
You know what I forgot to play with Primus, man, is that they recorded a song with Ozzy. And I totally forgot, because it's not on the playlist, because it's not on the it's not on Spotify. There was a couple Ozzy tribute albums or Black Sabbath tribute albums that came out. Yeah. And they had
Primus was on it.
Yeah, they did NIB with Ozzy. So
I fucking remember this. Yes.
Yeah, I had it on YouTube, and I had the YouTube link all the way up to the top of my notes. I forgot to play it here.
That's rad. That is rocking.
Yeah, there was like two volumes of the Nativity and Black tribute album.
For yeah, I remember that.
It wasn't on Spotify for some reason.
No. Yeah, you can't find that shit on Spotify. They don't put cool shit like that on there. Only like you could only find that like on eBay.
Right.
Like, you know, they were great. They were great compilations.
Yeah, that's probably why it's not on Spotify. There's probably so many dudes from different record labels and shit like that. They can't figure it out. But
yeah, it's a shame because it was rad. If I remember, like Faith No More was on there.
Yes.
From the top of my head, you know, but it was fucking great, great compilations.
Something I got rid of when I got rid of all my CDs and albums.
I know.
God
right?
damn it. You know,
yeah,
I had like 1200 CDs when I moved in with my wife. I sold them all to like a record store near me for like $80 or something. It was something like pathetic.
Dude, I just threw everything the fuck out because I didn't take care of that shit.
Yeah. I had it all stacked up
like posters.
Oh, no. Yeah.
No, I didn't take care of my CDs.
Okay. So I've got, hang on, let me sort by album covers here. Les Claypool did another album called A Whales and Woe in 2006. And then he went on tour with Les Claypool's Fancy Band. Here's a song called One Better. It's off of that. Cool. It had a xylophone in it. A little different. It was like, okay.
Very Red Hot Chili Pepper-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. All right. I got a couple other things. He had a country... Dude, I love this so much. So he has a country project called the Duo de Twang.
Really?
Where he is with this guy, Brian Kehoe, and they just play... They play country music. This was the... I sent you today. It was... the two of them, and then Les Claypool's kid was playing a banjo, and they were covering.
Oh, yeah, this is yeah.
Covering Johnny Cash, but so they put out an album, and they made here's a country version of Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. Mm. They covered Man in the Box by Alice in Chains. They did Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees. It's a weird shit, man. But here's Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, the hillbilly version from the Duo de Twang.
Now, Jerry was a race driver, he goes goddamn fast. He never did win the checkered flag, but he never did come in last. Jerry was a race driver, he's a hell son number one. With the most secrets on 4-4 duty, light him up just for fun.
Right. I love it. It's just
yeah,
it's
really so, like that.
It's like real rednecky kind of stuff. It's just cool, man, that he's like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to try something so different.
That's why he's cool, man. He's a real musician. He's adventurous. Like, I totally admire that.
Absolutely. He said he's in a jazz band now called Les Claypool's Bastard Jazz. They haven't recorded anything.
Great name.
One thing I did find before we get into the Sean Lennon stuff was he had this band, this side project in like the 90s called Beanpole. And Beanpole, he said, it sounds like weird carnival music recorded by mutant hillbillies. And Claypool had his own record label for a long time called Prawn Song, which was like supposed to be a playoff of Swan Song. Zeppelin's record label. And that was the album he released, like Fizzle Fry and all that other kind of stuff. And he released all this kind of like weird shit. But he was like, I'm going to release this thing called Beanpole. And there was another label that was like a joint venture with them. And the other label was like, nah, man, this is too weird. We're not doing it. And it was so much that Les Claypool's record label like went out of business over this, like over the argument over putting this out. He said it was like all musicians, but all the musicians had to record under a fake name and they had to play instruments they didn't normally play. So it would sound all fucked up. And when Claypool was telling Sean Lennon about it, Sean Lennon was like, this is great. We're going to put this out on my record label. So it came out recently, but it is really weird. But here's a song called Chicken Boy by Beanpole. It's really odd.
All right. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Real like so it's so weird that nobody would release it for like 40-30 years.
Really? I loved it.
It was weird, man.
Reminds me of something like early Phish. It's really
different.
Well,
it made me think of Mr. Bungle, just the Faith No More project or the Mike Patton project, like just kind of so wacky. Out there. Yeah. Just really, really weird. Even like the if you look up the album artwork, it's like the people are all like sideshow mutants and shit like that. So cool. Really weird. So,
I love that shit.
It was cool in that he couldn't even find somebody to release it, that it was so out there with all this other shit that he's released. So
his vaults of recordings probably huge, man.
Oh, can you imagine, man, when he, yeah, like
he probably has reels and reels and reels and memory computer and fucking much shit.
Yeah. All right. So last project we're going to talk about is the Claypool Lennon Delirium. And that is a partnership between Les Claypool and Sean Lennon, who is John Lennon and Yoko Ono's son. Dude, we could have done an entire episode on this.
Sure.
Much like we did the Johnny Cash and Rick Rubin partnership.
Fucking amazing.
This is some of my favorite shit that I've uncovered doing the show. It was so fucking good.
I was listening to it on 88.5, the World Cafe, when it first came out, and I was blown away by it. I was like, holy shit, this is like on another level.
I had listened to it when it had come out as well, and I just forgot about it. And then it came up in the notes, and I've been listening. I probably listened to this more than I listened to the Primus stuff the last 2 weeks.
It's really interesting stuff.
Primus went on tour with Sean Lennon's band, Sabretooth Tiger, and they both were kind of like, the tour was over and they were both kind of just talking, and they're like, well, neither of us have anything to do. We have no projects in the works. We're not doing anything. And Les Claypool was like, hey, man, I want you to just like, let's hang out. Let's get together and drink some wine. Les Claypool owns a winery. He's like, let's drink some wine. And they said they started jamming, and they were like, nobody makes like psychedelic, like old school psychedelic rock and roll albums anymore. So they got
together. That's exactly what it is, man. It's psychedelic. Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah.
And there's so many times, man, listening to this stuff, and I'm like, he sounds so much like fucking John Lennon.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. It's haunting.
I was listening to it today. I had it in my office. My wife got home from work and she stopped in and we're just shooting the shit. And I was like, she's like, are you doing the show tonight? And I'm like, yeah, I don't talk a whole lot about what we're doing. I'm like, dude, check this out. I'm like, doesn't this sound like fucking John Lennon's kid? And she was like, oh, wow, it really does. You know, like kind of pulled her in a little bit too. Normally by the end of the 2 weeks, she's heard enough of me, you know, playing the same thing for 2 weeks. But she's like, man, yeah, it really does sound like John Lennon.
I wonder if it's really hard for Sean to go out there because he sounds so much like his father. He sounds more like him than Julian did.
And I feel shitty. I feel a little dirty just being like, it's John Lennon's kid and he sounds like John Lennon, right? Like he's his own musician because the stuff he's made is really good. You know, he's
forever going to be in that. Right. He's always going to be in the shadow of his father, no matter what.
Right.
But to make a psychedelic album just makes sense.
Yeah. You just listen to it. It's a really different Les Claypool, right? It's not that crazy out there kind of shit.
No, it's totally melodic in its own way, in a weird way.
Yeah.
Play something, dude.
Yeah, dude. Here's this is Blood and Rockets. Like,
wow,
comic book guy, don't blow me up. That has such a Beatles vibe to it.
Oh my God, dude. It's very Sgt. Pepper, very psychedelic Sgt. Pepper era. You know, I could see the story going on in my head. Crazy fucking song, man. It's like the Les Claypool, so silly about a lot of shit. This is like something serious that he's doing. Like, he's not making some weird fucking, you know, I don't know, Les Claypool thing. He's like doing something serious.
Right. He's like, he's harnessing all of that talent and like focusing it.
Yes.
And also the bass wasn't the main instrument there either.
No.
Yeah.
You can totally hear Les's influence on there. You know, the hopping of the bass.
They did an EP in like 2009 and they covered Court of the Crimson King and they did like Boris the Spider, some other Astronomy Domine, like the Pink Floyd. And then they've done two other albums. Like the one we just played was the newest one from 2019.
It's a great album.
It really is, dude.
Holy shit. It's a great album. It's a shame that, I don't know, maybe I'm being ignorant, but it's a shame not many people know about it.
I don't think people do. I mean, shit, you're not going to hear that on the radio.
No.
Yeah. And even, I think I sent you a link. It was something, an interview that two of them did together. And they were talking about like, yeah, all right, second album through, we know our place. We know how to work together. Yeah. It was really cool to hear them kind of talking to each other. I'm a total fanboy. I was like, the album was really, really fucking good.
Yeah, it's one of the best things that I've heard in a long time from anything.
Yeah, as much as we talked about like his modern music dead and all that other kind of crap, I was like, this was really good.
Yeah.
Let's play another song off of it, dude.
Yeah, please do.
You got Amethyst Realm.
We could do a whole episode just on this fucking album.
We absolutely could, man. Just the partnership between the two of them and all this other shit here. She called out to the end. Man, is so good.
Have these headset on.
Yes.
You hear everything that's going on in there. Holy shit. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's like even when Les Claypool was just singing it, like his voice is in the background, right? And everything he does, he's front and center. The bass is front and center. It's kicking you in the nuts. This is, man, it's just.
He blends in.
Right. It's really cool that when a guy that eccentric and that powerful with his music decide to take a step back and go in the background, it's just really fucking good music, man.
They complement each other very well, man.
They do. Their voices work well together. The instrumentation works well together. It's just, it's really got that, like a Pink Floyd.
Oh, sure. I thought the same thing. I wonder if they tour.
They have, you know what, dude? I was just looking as that was playing to see if they don't have any dates. They have toured before.
Hmm.
But
I would totally go to that.
Their website said like tour dates and it has listed 2020. So they haven't toured in a long time. But I was like, yeah, dude, that would be like shit, man. You go to like the Planetarium and they put that album on the laser show.
Sure. You know, sure.
Really cool. It's so weird, man, because that was like a type of music that I did not like at all when I was growing up. And now I'm like, this is great.
No, it reminds me of a lot of Radiohead. Like some of the, like maybe off of OK Computer.
Yeah, I fucking hate Radiohead too.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, maybe I never gave him a chance, but I don't know.
You should listen to The Bends. That's like,
all right,
it's a guitar album.
All right. That's, you know, maybe some that I've gotten older I would appreciate. I can't stand Tom York's voice, but that's okay. That's okay. You know, I'm open to, this is shit I never would have liked 20 years ago. And now I listen to it. I'm like, oh my God, this is the coolest stuff we've uncovered doing the show. So
this is some other level stuff. And it's like, why don't people know more about it?
Right, because you would never hear that on the radio now.
No, it's too out there. Maybe you hear it on the World Cafe Live.
Right, like XPN, the indie station, some college rock stations. But other than that, and again, man, if Les Claypool wasn't famous from Primus, he wouldn't have the pull to be able to like, I'm going to do this psychedelic album with
John Lennon's kid.
Right. So,
well, I hope our listeners give it a chance. Go to Spotify and listen to it. The whole album, it's great.
We'll have to promote the shit out of it. It's on our social media. I really, really enjoyed discovering that. So, all right, cool, man. I think that might be it for Primus and Les Claypool. I have so many fucking second thoughts.
Wait a minute. We didn't talk about one of the funniest things I think Les Claypool did. And he did a mockumentary.
Yes.
Electric Apricot.
Yes.
And it was like a Spinal Tap thing.
Yes, and, about a jam band.
Yes, go playing a festival.
Yes. I watched about half of it today and then
it sucks, but
I got sucked into work and I couldn't finish it, but
I mean, it's funny if you're a musician and like I can totally appreciate like the whole Spinal Tap feel to it. But, you know, it's something different he did. Les Claypool made a movie. Dude, that movie's been out so long, I rented it at Blockbuster.
You said that today. You missed
that. That's how long it's been around.
So that was like, you rented it like what, when we worked together at Blockbuster Video? Oh.
No, this was maybe about like 2006.
Oh, okay. Yeah, dude, so it's like a fake, but it was also had like Bobby Weir from The Dead were in it.
Yeah,
like
Warren Haynes is in it.
Yeah, so they're playing like themselves.
If you're a Grateful Dead fan, if you're an Allman Brother fan, if you're just a jam band fan, I think you'll appreciate Electric Apricot. I was at a show this weekend for New Year's Eve, and the guy I was hanging out with, he brought it up, and I didn't even say anything about us doing Les Claypool. I was like, holy shit, Electric Apricot. I totally forgot about it. And I start telling him about what we were doing our show about. But he brought it up and he was, it is out there. People do know about it.
I was digging it. I was watching. I said I just got sucked into work shit. And I had to turn it off and concentrate. But I'll finish it. So he's also written a book, too. So
did he?
Yeah. So he's kind of, he's doing a little bit of everything. I mentioned his son, too. His son was in The duo de Twang, he showed up a couple times with banjo, and he said his son made like a documentary about Primus, and his son does all kinds of artistic shit. And so it was cool.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
Good stuff. All right. Second thoughts. I have so much that we may have to skip music news, but the first one I got is we had two emails from Omar, and I promised in the last episode we would read it. So, hello, Baha'i. It is Omar. I listened to your episode on heavy metal music. I like American rock and roll, but did you know that we have heavy metal music here in India? I have sent links to two songs for you. So he sent me a link for a song called Dana Dan by Bollywood. Here's a little bit of that.
Face of a rapist, and yeah, I take this for the viewing pleasure of the nameless faces, he disgraces, and yeah, one day I may change his kind with my mind, but I won't borrow the beast, never make peace and feast, and if you're gonna let it eat for the white beetle, but I gotta be...
Okay, so that's
like, I like it.
I'm watching it on YouTube, and it's like one of the guys has got, he's very traditional Indian, like a turban and some other stuff. So it was called Bloodywood. I'm sorry, it's not Bollywood, excuse me. And then he sent another one called by a band called Kryptos, called Force of Danger, which is another Indian heavy metal band. So that's like, it's a bunch of indie guys, but they're wearing like the leather biker jackets, and it's like very hair metal looking kind of shit.
It sounds very, very like rat.
Yeah.
You know?
So Omar continues. He said, I read on Facebook that your club, McCusker's Tavern, was called one of the greatest in your city. Blessings to you. The day I come to America and walk in there will be a great day. I hope to meet many people, including Rob Owens, and give greetings to all. And then he also said, after our Christmas episode, thank you for saying you will read my email next time, but why was I not invited to your Christmas party? And the warden was.
Omar,
if we could find a way to get you to record something for us, we would love to have you on. We can. I responded to him. I emailed him back and said, like, dude, if there's a way to do that, we can. I don't know.
Oh, dude, maybe we can just get him on the phone and record him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that would work with the distance and the, you know, if there'd be charges or anything. It's amazing
that this guy, you know, he loves rock and roll.
Yeah, it's funny, man. He's sending us all this stuff. It's just really cool. So,
yeah.
He said he wants to come to America sometime. He couldn't because of COVID, and then maybe he will. So
he can go stay with the
warden.
Yeah. He has plenty of room at his house.
He sure does. All right. I have some other stuff. Ron from Philadelphia. You guys need to do an episode on Dinosaur Jr., please. It's like, okay, throw it on a list. Feedback on the Judas Priest episode. And then we got some feedback on the Christmas episode. So the heavy metal episode. Steve Bowden sent us an email, said, I'm new to your show and listened to your heavy metal episode. You covered all of the big ones. You talked about Dee Snider testifying before Congress, but you didn't mention Judas Priest being sued for having subliminal messages in their music that allegedly cause people to kill themselves. I haven't listened to the show on thrash metal yet, but I'm going to start it next since it seems like part two of the heavy metal story. All right. So that's kind of that's a fun topic, but 1985, two guys got really drunk and high and they shot themselves in the fucking face with a 12 gauge shotgun.
I remember this happening. Yeah.
And shame on us, man. We should have mentioned this when we talked about heavy metal.
Hey, we only have so much time to mention shit, man.
Right. One guy died instantly. The other guy blew his goddamn face off, but he lived for like 3 years.
I remember being on like Sesame, Jesse Raphael, whatever the hell it is. And he was all banged up.
Yep.
Hey-oh.
The families wound up suing Judas Priest, saying that there were subliminal messages hidden in the music. And after
that,
like,
was so ridiculous.
Remember that? Like all the satanic panic of everything. And after a 6-week trial, a judge dismissed the case. So, all right.
Remember they all went to court and Rob Halford like sat on the stand and sang the lyrics to it?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then we got some feedback on the Christmas episode. Hey, prisoners, this is Gary, the one you call quote unquote comic book guy. I've written in before about some information you got wrong in the past, but this email is about something else you forgot. I was listening to your Christmas show, and I can't believe you didn't mention the Ramones. They have a song, Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight. Didn't you guys put the Ramones as one of your best American rock and roll bands? Ryan, you call yourself a punk rocker? Sorry, guys, but you seem like posers when you drop the ball like that. You can do better. Well,
wow.
Thanks for listening, dude.
No, I appreciate him being honest.
We did fuck up and forget the Ramones, but
hey, sorry, dude. I mean, we can't remember everything. I mean,
right.
Shit. I mean, give us, you know, next year we'll have a better Christmas story. Maybe we'll have a play. Who knows?
with Johnny Ramone. Joey Ramone and all those guys. So, and then we got another email from Danny Smith. So he wrote us in about our history of metal episode as well. Said, metal is American. Well, let's back this out. Metal is a version of rock and roll, which is a version of the blues, which is American, but it's very much have African-American influences. It seems less Zeppelin and more pioneer of hard rock with a bluesy influence. Black Sabbath did not consider themselves metal. They're a hard rock band, and it seems metal has a superficial influence, especially in the 70s, 80s glam era. However, a lot of that was very much the me era, which is where greed was all that matters. I've read two of Nikki Sixx's books, and if you listen to him, he's a junkie and a thief and a womanizer. This is a hero. I can listen to the Red Hot Chili Peppers story. They came into the quote-unquote punk and metal era and invented their own sound. Metal was more than music. It was about style. Good bands, you can just listen to in whatever era the music is, it has universal appeal. Zeppelin and the Stones are that type of music. Can you really have rock and roll without the blues? Nope. And this is why true rock lovers need to explore its roots much more. Yours in Christ Jesus via Our Lady sometimes, Danny.
Thanks, Danny.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we went back a couple times, back and forth over email. I wrote him back. He wrote me back. I should offer them to send some stickers, man. If you're listening to us, you want to drop some of the email to your address, be happy to send some stickers, but always down for the conversation, dude. And I appreciate him saying you got to keep exploring those roots of rock and roll, which is, you know, we're constantly which is great. Doing
we're
that.
We're trying to do. We're always trying to do that. I appreciate you listening, Danny. You know, thanks for contacting us. Any kind of feedback, we love.
Yeah, dude. Somebody wants to blow us up. I don't care. You know, some people keeping us honest, man. Comic book guy.
You know, right, I'm not mad about it.
Right. Telling us we missed the Ramones. We're like, fuck yeah, dude. We missed the Ramones.
Yeah, we are posers.
Right.
Fuckers.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah, dude. We'll skip music news. We've been talking for almost 2 hours.
Is there anything good in the news?
The Foo Fighters said they're going to keep going. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
And, Courtney Love said she was originally supposed to be in Fight Club and she got kicked out because Brad Pitt said he wanted to make a movie and play Kurt Cobain and she said no. And then suddenly, hours later, she was fired from Fight Club. But all
she
the people
sucked in that movie.
Well, and all the people in Fight Club said she was never given a job on Fight Club. So I don't know what the fuck she was talking
about. She's just getting her name out there.
Right. That's all I had, man. It was a slow news week anyway with the holidays and all those kind of things.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You did have a really good pick for the electric chair this week, though. You messaged me today. And you're like, we got to send this song to the electric chair. And I was like, oh, my God, yes.
Oh, dude. Just play it. We won't even have to give it an announcement. Ugh. Right, everybody. This song,
Love Shack by the
P-52s.
What do you think about this band?
I think they're a great band for a punk rock band.
Right, like what are they?
they're definitely new wave punk rock.
Yeah, yeah, new waves are good. All right, they're real, I don't know, kind of throwback sounding.
Yeah, I mean, they came out in the 70s.
Yeah, like Rock like Lobster.
Rock Lobster, was, yeah, absolutely. That was cool. They were just something, I don't know exact. Maybe they're from California, but they were doing something totally different than everybody else.
Yeah.
But this song was just so fucking played out, and it's, I don't know. It just was everywhere. It's still everywhere. Like, you go to the fucking supermarket, it's on overhead.
Yeah, I don't need to hear drunk girls going like, "Tin Riff, Rast It" ever again.
Is that what she, I don't even know what the fuck she's saying.
I think that's what she's singing. I don't know. Now I'm Googling shit that I should never
even hear about.
All right, Tin Roof Rusted. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's, all right, we don't need to dwell on this, do we?
No, let's just fucking pull the switch, sir.
Yeah. Oh, well, she's also in that, before we go, she's in that shitty, shiny, happy people REM song.
And she also made that song with Iggy Pop, Candy. Candy,
yeah.
That's a great song.
Yeah. All right, so they got some stuff. This is just a bad song. All right, let's just fucking kill and get out of here.
We sentence you to death.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, man, I come up with all the good ideas for this show.
You got to hear so much bad music at the bar. I can't imagine.
Oh, dude, some dude's been playing like Zac Brown Band, and he's like, "What? You don't like country?" I was like, "I like country before they start going to the beach." You know, like, fuck, John Wayne never went to the beach.
I remember
he was storming it. With a rifle.
I remember telling you I was going to see them, and you're like, "They fucking suck, dude."
They do fucking suck. Just listening to them recently, I was like, "All right, nothing better to do to talk to this dude, and I'm going to listen to this song." I'm like, "This shit fucking sucks. It's poser music, man." Like, I can see poser fucking jock dudes going out and fucking wearing cowboy boots and cowboy hats to fucking the Zac Brown Band.
It's the Jimmy Buffett crowd and the but like, you said before, yeah, country music. Yeah.
Country music and going to the beach. I don't get it.
Yeah. There's a couple other
it's a whole cultural thing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Cowboys at the beach.
Yep. Not Jason Aldean. The little short guy. He plays he's got No Shoes Radio on Sirius. Kenny Chesney. Kenny Chesney. I mean, he plays like Lincoln Financial Field. He plays like football stadium.
God bless him. Yeah, you know, but it's all that. But it's country music that's not country. It's like pop music with a twang.
Yeah,
talking about drinking margaritas on the fucking beach.
Yeah, country music has definitely gotten really. You called it Bon Jovi country for a while.
It's Bon Jovi country. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a downer for Bon Jovi, you know, but. Oh, I think all these country bands, these guys looked at Bon Jovi and was like, "Oh, I can kind of like image his image and I can do my fucking rock and roll image, but I'm totally lame country fucking music."
I listen to more country now than I listen to any other like modern music, but something I was listening to last week, they were playing some countdown on Sirius. They were like, the 20 best country songs of the 90s. And I like, you know, I didn't listen to this shit then. And I was listening to it. I'm like, man, this is completely different than what country music is now.
It's just unreal.
You know, like guys like Alan Jackson, it was way more like, you know, pedal steel guitar. And it was way more yeehaw than it is now.
Yeah. I don't like it at all, man. Yeah. I don't like any of the country music that's going on right now, except for like, there's a few things out there that are like outlaw country that's going on. People bring the attention to me down at the bar when I talk about it. There are some cool little outlaw country bands out there, but they're like little punk rock bands. You have to search for them.
Yeah, there's like Sirius has got that country outlaw station that's sometimes they got some cool stuff that like Mojo Nixon's on there all the time hosting.
Mojo Nixon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elvis is everywhere, man.
Yes.
Elvis is everywhere, man.
Yeah, he hosts on there all the time. And he's got sometimes he plays some cool, like whatever the hell they call it, like a cowpunk, like that kind
wow,
of like
yeah, right
country,
on.
country punk music kind of put together. It's kind of cool, but you know. I don't know. We'll put it on the show list. Maybe we'll get around to it. So I know we talked about doing Outlaw Country for a while. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. And that's a lot of real like cowboy shit that people may not care about.
I want to do a flat out country episode, like maybe the beginning of country. Like I know we're going back to the 1800s,
right,
and everything like that, but. The storytelling of it, of country music, is what I find interesting.
Yeah, and I was saying before, man, like, I think I threw that out last year, like the Grand Ole Opry was coming up on like its 94th year of like every Friday night they broadcast from the Grand Ole Opry. And it was like, you know, it's such a cultural thing, you know, like the what that means and all the people that played there. And if you're a member of the Opry and all that other kind of shit, so. Yeah, and they really call it like a church. It's like it's the mother church of country music. So yeah, there's a story in there somewhere. I think we got to find an angle beyond like country music. You know, it's like fuck, you're gonna do 200 years of music.
We got ideas.
We ain't going anywhere.
2023. We got a bunch of ideas. I promise you, we're gonna have some good stuff this year, guys.
We got all kinds of stuff. So. All right, man, I think that is a wrap for episode 55 and the debut of season 3. Thank you so much for spending the last few hours talking Les Claypool with us. If you want to hear the full versions of all that stuff and all those projects we talked about, if you want to hear all the full versions of all the songs and all those projects we talked about, there's a link to our episode playlist in the show notes. You can also go to the show notes and find links to our Facebook and our Twitter accounts, our website, at prisonersofrockandroll.com and our email address at show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. And if you're ever out in Philadelphia, you can stop by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets. So, you know, we love getting feedback. Like Ryan said, man, we don't care whether you tell us we're great, or you want to tell us that we're missing something, or you want to throw an idea at us. You know, we've got some shit. We've got a handful of show ideas. We got to get cracking.
Yeah, man, we got a responsibility here to bring the entertainment to the people.
Right. We're here to educate and entertain. So I think that's it, man. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode.
Keep on rocking. Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.